Hello everybody, Myozone, and this is On's Gadget Talk for Wednesday, 22nd of June, 2022. Obviously, didn't record last week because I was pretty lazy. Laziness, obviously, procrastination gets the best of me, and that's pretty annoying, but we got a lot to talk about this week. First of all, Facebook, now Meta, have shown off new prototypes for the VR headsets. We got more details about the Nothing Phone one, including that illustriously well-known back, basically that those LEDs that sort of are lit behind the phone, which are kind of unique, along with we might be seeing new AirTags and much, much more. So without further ado, let's just get rolling, shall we? Alrighty, first thing we're going to definitely talk about in today's episode is Meta's VR prototypes. Now, we all know that Meta obviously is in the business of virtual reality headsets. They've bought Oculus, obviously, so many years ago in a mission to sort of create a new business line for what used to be known as Facebook. Obviously, they're known for social networking, and obviously that business probably has matured and sort of tapered off, of course, and now they need a new business line, and that is VR and metaverses. Now, we all know that they rebranded from Facebook to Meta, especially for that reason. Now, what we have here is that Mark Zuckerberg, obviously the main head honcho, the CEO of Meta Platforms, along with Meta Reality Labs' chief scientist, Michael Abrash, basically in a video showed off a bunch of prototypes, basically, of the VR headsets. Now, Meta makes VR headsets, including, obviously, because they bought out Oculus, including the Meta Quest 2, hugely popular. A lot of nerds, a lot of gadget lovers out there will know that. A well-known built-in sort of mobile headset that lets you experience virtual worlds easily and access the metaverse that that Meta is coming up with, that obviously Meta is planning to build. In fact, the Meta itself announced that they're now offering virtual outfits that you can have for your avatars, or you can use on Instagram, and obviously eventually in their metaverse, which is interesting. See how that rolls off the tongue. Anyways, so they showed off a bunch of prototypes. In a way, the first one that I want to sort of mention is if I can get this to come up here, that is. The first one, the most iconic in a way, is called Starburst. And this is an interesting prototype. Basically, they're trying to address the... Now, Zuckerberg was explaining all these headsets that they were sort of testing out. And also, they were testing different ideas or different innovations and implementations that they bring in their future headsets down the road. Obviously, the idea of a prototype is sort of test out new kinds of ideas or concepts that could be possible in the future. Now, Starburst prototype is pretty unique. The problem with VR headsets is the displays are a little low res, and so you're able to see the lines essentially, and so the bleed out of pixels. And again, it's not that real. It doesn't have that realism in a way, in a sense. And so they created a prototype called which essentially has a extremely bright HDR display inside. It's a headset so bright and so heavy that you have to essentially hold it. You can't strap it to your head, so you have to essentially hold it like binoculars, which is crazy. Seen a video, it's very interesting. It's on YouTube, so do check it out. But the way it works is that there are a bunch of fans and electronics and essentially a lamp behind the LED display that essentially allow the display to produce up to 20,000 nits of brightness. And the idea is to give you more realism, essentially, as if you're literally right there. Obviously, the real world lighting is no match. You can't match that in a virtual setting. So, but then again, it's just an idea they're testing, which is pretty interesting in a way. And then there's another prototype called Butterscotch, which apparently displays near retinal resolution. Essentially, you could see the bottom line of an eye test in VR easily. And in our prototype, they had to cut the field of view of the Oculus Quest 2, now the Meta Quest 2, in half. So from the curve it has to something a little more regular, allowing it that extremely high resolution. Again, almost like real life, which is what's the key here, in a sense. So that's pretty interesting. And then Also, then they showed off the Holocake 2, which is a pretty thin VR headset. It looks like a typical VR goggles that you probably get a Gen 1. It nearly feels like a Gen 1 product if you look at it in a sense, and it's pretty interesting in a way. Apparently, it's fully functioning, so you can essentially plug it to a computer and play VR games off it, which is pretty interesting. And again, it's a step up from the original HoloCake, so it uses how to describe it. Essentially, it uses holographic. Essentially, it's a holographic display for AR. So the AR glasses have essentially holographic displays instead of LCD panels, literally in front of your eyes. So it gives you that sense of it being there, even though it's not. So that's pretty interesting, in a sense. Yeah, I mean, it's cool that they're working on these products, generally speaking. And then there's the Mirror Lake concept, which is, again, basically a little slim, also equally compact, probably. Apparently, it takes the HoloCake 2 concept and pushes it further with features like HDR, mechanical varifocal lenses, which is apparent. Again, mechanical means that essentially the lenses automatically adjust depending on the eye here, and eye tracking. And this is probably to improve the VR viewing experience, because when you use a VR headset, the focal length can be quite tricky to handle, and again, you can get a bit nauseating and dizzy using it. So that's again, and also yes, and the Mirror Lake prototype looks a whole lot like essentially ski goggles that are sophisticated. And again, it has LCD displays with laser backlights, and this is, I'm reading it off an article from Engadget. So again, it's pretty interesting, right, in a way. And yeah, and apparently, according to Meta's sort of key chief scientist, Mr. Abrash here, he kind of mentions that the key here is that thanks to holography, everything is thin and flat. The varifocal technology is flat, and so are all the holographic films used for the HoloCake, as well as prescription correction and eye tracking. And so it's easy to keep adding thin, flat technologies. This means that the end product can pack more functionality into a smaller package than anything that exists today. And obviously, he's mentioning about the holographic displays, kind of, which, again, where you sort of beam. Essentially, there's like a sort of a laser, and it beams like a picture sort of into a frame, sort of into a lens, essentially into a lens, and you essentially see something in front of you, but it's not a display. So you could say it's a whole lot safer than an LCD display, because it's not really in your eye all the time. You're not seeing all the blue light. So it's a bit of a big deal, kind of, developing this holographic technology. Now, the way I described it, obviously, you might be even more confused. But basically, in a nutshell, Meta is essentially working on VR and AR technology, and they've essentially worked on technologies like holographic lenses, so allowing you to essentially see, to get essentially a AR capabilities. I poorly described it, but essentially you get your AR because of the holographic lens, kind of, that is there. But as they figured out HDR on a VR headset, and again, features like mechanical lenses, essentially, so you adjust the focal length automatically without needing to essentially, without really needing to manually set it or tweak it around when you're wearing the headset. And again, eye tracking, which I think is pretty cool to have. Obviously, this is several years away, basically, from a production model, but it's good to see that a company like Meta is working on it, and it's clearly seeing that AR and VR is the future, and investing in this technology, which is, again, nice to have, really, in a sense. And the current headsets that Meta sells, the Quest 2 and all, are not really the final form of what Meta wants with their metaverse, in a sense. So again, the fact that they're essentially going back to the lab and essentially testing all sorts of things and seeing what ticks, and while we allow that realism, that essentially that feeling of being in a virtual world that's actually real, but even though it's not, it's a bit of a big deal. So again, it's pretty interesting. What can I say? It's really cool that they are working on it, in a way. Okay, and the HDR that once HDR is capable on VR headsets, You get more realism. You get that you get that feeling that's right there in front of you, even though it's not. But again, it's pretty cool stuff over from Meta. And again, can't wait to see a headset one day with this technology. But again, pretty interesting nonetheless. All right, moving from prototypes to actually final production products that are about to come out next couple of months. We got the Nothing Phone 1. Now, obviously, last week I didn't do an episode, but they kind of showed off the back of the phone and sort of the how it would look. And the reaction kind of has been, it just looks like a funky iPhone 12 or a funkier iPhone 13 if you add in, if you look at the angles and the sides and all. But it's pretty interesting. And if you ask me, it looks pretty it looks unique. There's nothing, see, nothing, get it? Get what I'm trying to say here? There's nothing quite like it. Lol. I mean, smart, fair play to Carl Pei. He's trying to essentially offer a unique product, and that's another piece of technology, a uniquely designed device. Now, we've gotten basically a further look on the Nothing Phone 1. When we don't know the performance or the camera on it, we'll have to wait till July 12th when the event happens. But MKBHD posted a video about the Nothing Phone 1, where he sort of showed off the back, of the phone, which is essentially lit uniquely. So when you're, for example, when you're charging the phone, you get a little indicator at the LED indicator, and it's and I remember it correctly, it's like 200 LEDs kind of put together around the back of the phone. If I again, I think it's 200 or 2000. Again, I'll link MKBHD's video in the show notes. You can go check it out if you have the time. It's pretty interesting going into further detail. He doesn't show up. It doesn't mention the hardware or any other or the inside of the phone or the UI. But we'll have to wait till next month. Then we get to see get a look on of the whole phone inside out. But again, focusing on the what is basically the back, the back LED, the LED back that you have essentially, sort of. Apparently it's quite bright that you can essentially use as a flashlight for the camera, which is pretty cool. There's a little dot on sort of the corner, so you have a recording indicator. And again, there's a little, again, part of the LED sort of array at the bottom. It's, for example, when you're charging a phone, it shows your charge state. That's pretty cool. When you wirelessly charge the Nothing Phone 1, or obviously reverse wireless charge it, the LEDs that essentially are around the Qi charging coil light up, which is pretty cool in a way. Nothing calls it the glyph interface, which is a pretty interesting name. Again, the back of the phone is supposed to evoke a sense of the phone being nothing, kind of, it being transparent. Obviously, it is well designed, being transparent. They sort of have hidden a whole lot of things inside, being that nothing is going for sort of the transparent aesthetic, the clear back aesthetic, which is pretty interesting. But yeah, you can even again because nothing has a UI sort of, you can program it to do a whole bunch of things. It can send a light up when there's notifications or a call or incoming text or incoming call, and essentially lights up. So that's pretty cool. And again, it has a bit of a personality in a way. And interestingly, you have the front of the phone, and then obviously the MKG's video shows off the settings, and obviously incidentally shows off the display. And this is a normal display with a little cutout for selfie camera at the top, left aligned apparently, and a flat display. And just a symmetrical bezel apparently, so that's pretty cool in a way. It's just like a normal phone again. It's basically like a funky iPhone 12. Again, nothing quite like it. It's a pretty interesting phone in a way. I mean, the back, it doesn't have anything doesn't have anything fancy. It's just nothing but clear back, which is pretty interesting in a way. So I kind of understand what they're going for. I probably they're trying to make a splash and kind of, you know, make something unique, make a unique design, uniquely designed phone, especially for the first iteration. Down the road, probably the Nothing Phone 3 will probably be nothing like it. Get it? I'm sorry, I gotta start with the puns of nothing. It's just funny. But yeah. But we're getting, again, as we're moving over to the launch on July 12th, we're getting more and more information about what this phone really will be. But again, I would say it'd be nothing but, hopefully it'd be nothing but incredible in a way. I'm sorry, I gotta start with the nothing references. It's just the naming is genius. Like, again, Carl Payers has striked it here. I don't know why. It just rolls off the tongue smoothly. Oh well. What do I think of the glyph? The glyph is cool. I think it's a unique personality. I'm sorry, I'll have to say this again, but nothing quite like it. Okay, so that's a fact. Yeah, I think it just gives a unique personality, a unique touch to the phone, because there's so many phones out there and they all look nearly the same. The camera cutout is the real difference in a way, and the texture, but when you look in the inside, it's almost nearly the identical hardware, especially on the Android side. You have nearly similar processors, nearly similar spec sheets, and so I think they're trying to sort of stand out and be nothing but incredible, in a way. So that's pretty interesting. And again, I can't stop myself from the puns, really. It's just, what can I say? It's an extraordinary phone. Let's just say that. I probably at the risk of sounding like Sir David Attenborough. It's an extraordinary phone, nonetheless. Let's see. Hopefully, when they launch it, it'll probably be probably seriously be worth the money. It's gonna be a high-end phone. It's gonna be a nearly. It's gonna be a premium phone. Obviously, they're not gonna be selling it at a. They're not gonna sell it on a budget, and it'll be a lot of work for nothing. Interestingly, speaking of the Nothing Phone 1, obviously Carl Payers has mentioned that they're going to obviously release a limited edition, essentially a first run of phones, kind of. And now we know more details. So Nothing has announced that they're going to be launching the Phone 1 obviously next month. But if you want to get the first 100 units of the phone, you can do that through StockX. So on StockX, you can place a bid starting from $156, and it goes up to 1,000, and no matter how, how much, depending on how much you want to spend, kind of. And you basically can get a one of a hundred sort of first run Nothing Phone 1, so I think it's pretty cool in a way. And just so you know, the glyph at the back is gonna be on all Nothing phones, so that's on all the Nothing Phone 1 models that are gonna come out. So that's something to keep in mind. Weirdly enough, it says, and if you're living in the US, you have to keep this in mind. And this is a warning on the StockX page listing for this phone. Nothing Phone 1 is not fully supported in North America. So that kind of means that certain providers will not be supported. So do check, obviously. It kind of, again, some think it's a spiritual successor to the OnePlus phones. But I obviously tell you this is a totally different phone in of itself. So again, it's pretty interesting nonetheless. And we're going to talk about phones, kind of. So in the next couple of months, the new Galaxy Foldables are going to come out. And interestingly, we've gotten leaks already. Not leaks of the Fold. We're getting leaks left and right about the new Galaxy Foldable devices. The Z Fold 4 is going to be coming out. Now, we know it's going to be hopefully expected, according to a lot of sources, unveiled on August 10th. I promise the sources are not, trust me, bro, okay? Just so you know. So we could see a Galaxy Unpacked on August, Samsung Unpacked on August the 10th, and we'll hopefully see the new foldables, interestingly. Now, one detail we're getting to know basically from leaks is that the Z Fold 4 will apparently be will have a 6x5 aspect ratio. That's weird. Usually it's 6.2, 6.2 by 5. So typical phone aspect ratio, the ideally good one is would be 21 by 9, which is ultra wide. It gives you a tall photo display. Here you have 6.2 by 5 on the Z Fold 3. The Fold 4, on the other hand, will have a 6 by 5 aspect ratio. Again, and then the outer display, when you fold it in half, basically will give you a 23 by 9 aspect ratio compared to the currently standard 24 by 5 by 9 on the Fold 3, the current one. And the upcoming one will be different. Interestingly, in what looks to be pictures of the creases of both foldables, it looks like as if someone put some bed sheets and like a hole in the middle to show the difference increase. Basically, it's hard to describe without showing you the image, but based on the photos, the full three on your very on the left side essentially has like a more visible, a kind of rounder crease, and on the right hand side, the fold four has like a slightly reduced, slightly less visible crease, kind of. It's still there, but it's a bit more flatter. It's not too curvy. It's so hard to describe it. Again, and also, we don't know if it actually is a display, kind of, and see the hinges. To be honest with you, I did actually saw the Z Fold and Z Flip 3 on display. And it was like, I think it was December last year, probably. That was probably when I came back to Bahrain, kind of. I walked into a Samsung store, so these were on display, sort of. And honestly, I tell you, the creases are not that visible. Or honestly, you shouldn't be bothered with the crease. It's not going to be a deal breaker, in a way. It's not too extreme. It's not that bad, kind of. It's a little better, but it's a little visible. You still feel that sort of layer, kind of, you know, because again, the crease essentially is sort of display sort of curving, because there's a gap between the display and the hinges. And so it's not that bad. I mean, to be honest, if you honestly don't put much focus or attention, you're not gonna notice it really. But on the Z Fold 4, straight out of the gate, this is kind of how the crease will be from the get go. So it'll be a little better, sort of. But then again, on the other hand, the aspect ratio is interesting. So in the end, you essentially get a wider and shorter Fold 4, which is interesting in a way. Oh, someone in the comments in the GS, this is posted on GSM Arena, obviously quoting leakers. And one of the commenters wrote, "The photo leak is this bedsheet. Imagine weird." I honestly thought the same. Lol, how funny. So that's pretty interesting in a way. So that's something to keep in mind. On the other hand, we have another rumor. This was from last week, sort of, and I found this, read this in a newsletter. Samsung could be looking to kill off the FE edition, the fan edition, apparently. Now, there's no reason as to why the fan edition is essentially being phased out for something more different, but I'm probably assuming that Samsung probably realized that the Galaxy S22 line might be losing a whole bunch of sales because people end up going for the FE edition. People think the FE is like a special edition or a cheaper version of the S series. And so people don't go for the S22, instead they end up buying the S22 FE. And that's probably the case for me. If I were to go and try to buy a Samsung phone today, aside from the A series, there's also the S22 FE. On the flip side, weirdly enough, there's been reports, there's another report I read online, that Samsung produced more A series phones they made more A series phones than actual sales numbers. So there are quite a lot of A series phones sitting in warehouses ready to be sold. So I'm probably assuming Samsung is probably looking at the current condition, and as I said, they're realizing that the A series is not moving as many units as say the S20 or S21 FE, or probably the S22 FE if that is going to come out. We don't know about the S22 FE. I don't think it's going to come out. I think they're probably going to make a much nicer A series phone. They're probably going to offer an A73 or something, or A93 or some. Again, they might come out with something interesting. It's Samsung. They're going to try to increase market share. The M series is very popular, I've seen, and so is the A series. So they're going to, and also the A series is like in a tough spot, because the Fold, the Z, and the S series is popular on one end for premium buyers. The A series is kind of there, but some mid-range phone buyers will go for it, but the rest are kind of going for other brands. So I think Samsung wants to sort of essentially spruce up the A series lineup, so they're going to discontinue the FE edition, the fan edition phones. But oh well, that's pretty interesting development. And again, this is according to Sam Mobile. So again, because they spoke to a lot, of sources. Hopefully not Trust Me Bro. Again, multiple sources spoke anonymously to Sam Mobile. But then again, there's no exact reason, but again, I think it's just the fact that they probably want to release more A-series phones, or they want more people to buy A-series phones, generally speaking. So that's probably important in a way. So again, this is a pretty interesting development, nonetheless. All right, so if you use Telegram, this is going to be interesting. And if you ever, again, Telegram is a pretty good messaging app. I obviously personally don't use it because it doesn't work on my phone in a way. My younger sister does use it for some to talk to some folks, so that's pretty interesting. I mean, so Telegram is incredibly popular. It's probably second popular to WhatsApp in a way. 700 million people have downloaded and used Telegram, which is pretty interesting. And now, obviously, it's a popular app, but obviously, it costs a lot of money to run Telegram. So now they're offering a premium pack service. No, it is not a scam. This is not some virus. This is a real new feature that Telegram is bringing to the table. It's obviously their founder announced, Pavel Durov, the founder of Vkontakte, which is a very popular Russian social media site, and then he made Telegram, which is incredibly popular. It's in Russia and Ukraine, and obviously it's encrypted, which is what makes it popular. And obviously, it is quite easy to use it. Again, it's quite popular in half of the world. The other half of the world uses WhatsApp, and probably like 20% of the world uses SMS. That's probably all Americans. Sorry, if you live in America, I mean, I don't want to generalize it, but y'all use SMS. I don't understand. Maybe it's just that it's bundled for free, I assume, so you don't really need WhatsApp or Telegram. But for the rest of the world, SMS is expensive, impractical, and Telegram and WhatsApp work on all devices, and it's popular. Okay, that's what it is. But Telegram is very popular in a sense, and obviously it's remained free for a very long time. And now they're offering, they don't want to move into a paywall or charge a 99-cent service fee that like WhatsApp used to do back in the good old days. If you remember the 99-cent yearly, if you remember the 99-cent yearly service fee, you're a very old person now. I'm just saying, okay? You've clearly been here for a long time. Anyways, so now Telegram is now offering a subscription service, basically a bump up from the free tier. So what do you get with Telegram Premium? And this is a real subscription that you can actually pay for. $5 a month for $5 a month overall. So you're able to pay it through the App Store or Google Play, and obviously through a debit or credit card. So that's how it would be. All right, so basically Telegram Premium essentially doubles all the limits you have on Telegram. So for example, you can now send 4 gigabytes of file, up to 4 gigabytes of files generally. So that's, again, you can now send to users files up to 4 gigabytes, and those who have the regular free tier can access those, but they cannot upload up to 4 gigabytes. They only have a 2 gigabyte limit. But if you're a premium user, you get 4 gigabyte limit, because obviously it takes more server capacity. Along with that, you essentially get fastest possible download speeds, so you're not gonna be capped if on the free tier. You'll be given a priority when downloading files. You can follow up to 1,000 Telegram channels, so that's pretty cool. You can pin up to 10 chats, 20 t.me public reserve t.me public links, up to 20 of them, over 400 favorite GIFs or GIFs. You can set up to 10 stickers, so basically double what you get for free with regular Telegram. Along with that, you'll be able to get longer bio, a much longer biograph of your profile bio, so that's pretty cool. You can add links, and also you can also animate, you get animated profile videos, so that's pretty interesting. You can even convert voice messages to text and send that text to anyone, so that's pretty interesting, instead of sending a voice note. You get special stickers and reactions because you're a premium subscriber. You know you paid for it, so oh well. Along with that, you could set Telegram to always open a custom folder with all your favorite conversations in a way. So that's pretty cool, as I said. And you can automatically archive and mute new conversations that you kind of don't get on the free tier. On top of that, you won't get any ads in public channels. Pretty interesting, if you ask me. All right, so that's pretty cool, isn't it? If you use Telegram, you're gonna love it. Essentially, you'll essentially get double your limits. Basically, will be doubled from what they are currently. You won't get ads. You'll be able to essentially take your voice notes and switch them to text, essentially, and transcript them and send them. Basically, copy and paste them into any chat right then and there. So that's pretty awesome. And premium stickers, all that for $5 to $6 a month, depending on where you live in the world. It would be as cheap as $4 potentially. So that's pretty interesting in a way. We're getting a lot for our money, in a way. $5 to $6 a month. So that's pretty interesting. I'm sure they're obviously keeping the prices quite variable from region to region. So say you're in Russia, it's like $2, and say you're like if you're in the UK, it'd be $5. So that's pretty interesting, in a way. It is pretty interesting, what you're getting here. You're essentially getting this is basically, this is for the power users. So if you use Telegram all day long and always, you call people on Telegram, you message your friends, all your buddies have friends groups on it and all that kind of stuff, your family's on it, use it all the time, you send files. What I do know is people basically send entire movies, kind of. So they, you know, if they've already torrented a movie illegally, they essentially send the file to their buddies over Telegram, because you can send files up to 2 gigabytes generally. So it's quite popular for file sharing, apparently. So you can get up to 4 gigabytes of download limit, so that's pretty awesome. So if you're a power user of Telegram, you're gonna love premium. It's $5 a month, so as I said, if you're willing to spend that kind of money to cut out ads, to get to be able to send 4 gigabytes of files max to anyone, it's probably worth it in that sense. I don't use Telegram, but again, this is a good service for the power users, generally. So and also, as I said, Telegram needs to kind of pay the bills and pay for all those servers. They can't run it for free forever. What I do know, they run ads on public channels. Public channels are basically like social Twitter pages, so they have updates and posts. And you click on it, and you essentially get a timeline of posts, like, you know, a Twitter page. So they run ads in between. That makes sense. So the premium tier basically cuts that out. So that's pretty cool. Probably a good deal. I'd say it's a good deal if you use Telegram quite a lot, and you know what you get with your money. It's pretty interesting. So yeah, so if you're into Telegram, you're a power user, definitely check it out. Again, I do check it out. It'd be pretty interesting, in a way. I mean, it's a cool subscription service for a very popular app. So yeah, it's pretty interesting nonetheless. All right, so we could be getting new AirTags. Ming Chee Ko, very famous analyst, obviously well known analyst for Apple generally, at TF Securities kind of, tweeted out a few days ago, AirTag, which has not received much attention, has gradually grown in shipments since its release. Shipment estimations of AirTags reach about 20 million and 35 million units in 2021 and 2022 respectively. If AirTag shipments continue to grow, I believe Apple will develop the second generation. Basically, his point is that AirTags have kind of been one of those products that Apple did release, but obviously has not been to big fanfare, like say a new iPhone or that, or again like the Apple Watch. But again, it's been shipped in huge quantities, kind of. And again, apparently, if AirTag shipments reach a new high, basically like 50 million AirTags are sold and shipped, Apple would probably release a second gen, in a way, which is pretty interesting, if you ask me, to an extent. And this is why he tweeted a few days ago. So this is a pretty interesting development. There's not much to add to it, but an interesting point that he's added about AirTag shipments growing. I mean, AirTags are quite popular for essentially for tracking objects, and as I said, for making sure you don't lose your keys or your bags or anything like that. It's quite popular in that sense of the word. But AirTags have received negative publicity. I think more negative publicity than any Apple product in recent memory. I don't think there's been an Apple product that's been so negatively covered by the press, or has been given such a massive slack in a way, that's caused so much harm and has gotten so much negative publicity. So I think Apple's probably it might be working on a new generation of Air Tags. But again, I would probably suspect that they are looking at certain things before they offer a second gen, I'm sure. I'm purely trying to tackle the problem of obviously AirTags and their wrong uses, kind of, for stalking people, for essentially seeing where cars go and then those cars getting stolen. interestingly, but they're quite popular, and that probably means that they're gonna hopefully offer them. They might release a new version down the road, which is interesting. Again, I got nothing to add, but it's a pretty interesting product from Apple. It's quite utilitarian in a way, but yeah, but it's also popular. It's affordable for a lot of iPhone users. I think a 4-pack is $50, so you can never go wrong with that in a way. And again, I think more people buy it, then they'll probably offer a better version of the AirTag, which would be more accurate. It probably stops the stalking features. It maybe Apple does the effort of presetting it up. So when you order it online, it linked to your Apple ID, and then when it shipped to your door, where you essentially just pull a tag and pull off the little tape on the AirTag, and it literally is just yours. You cannot set it to another device, and part of me thinks that it's gonna be a whole while. It's gonna be a couple of years before they release the second gen of the AirTag. So I think you have the stalking issues and the theft problems that you got with the AirTags, which is tough in a way. So they'll probably work on that end probably. And then again, what else is there to add with the AirTags? I think what more likely would be another variant, one that fit that essentially is card sized. That'd be great to have, of course. An AirTag that essentially is card sized. It's rechargeable potentially, so you can just pop it into a wallet or stick it in a bag, and off it goes. You don't have to get another sort of adapter or accessory to sort of connect it to a bag or a wallet. That could be interesting. But then again, it'll be a long while before we see a second gen AirTag, that is. So again, it's pretty so again, it'll be a while. And finally, 12 South has come out with a new brand new product, the Hi-Rise 3. And that's our gadget of the week. That's a new segment we're going to be doing every single week. There's a new piece of tech that comes out. We're going to talk about it for quite briefly before we end the show. And our gadget of the week is the Hi-Rise 3, which is pretty cool. It's a wireless charging stand, and obviously 12 South is known for making Apple accessories, which is pretty cool. Goes well with your iPhone. The Hi-Rise 3 goes well with your iPhone, AirPods, and Apple Watch. So you essentially get an Apple Watch charger, a wireless charger for your iPhone and your Apple Watch. So you have a magnetic charger where the iPhone goes instead of MagSafe, so that's a thing. And that charges at 7.5 watts. Then you got a 3-watt Apple Watch charger and then a 5-watt base wireless charger. So you could charge all your Apple gear in one go, your AirPods, your iPhone, and your Apple Watch. And it's pretty cool in a way. You will need a 20-watt USB-C adapter. So if you have 20, again, if you have a 20-watt USB-C plug and a USB-C charging cable, then you're good to go right there in a way. So that's convenient. And again, it's got a sleek design, so as it is with 12 South products, and it goes well with your nightstand or your desk, so it's definitely worth checking out. Again, I'll link the this costs $100 basically, and it's available on Amazon now and their website. I'll link the Amazon link down below. Obviously, if you buy it from there, you'll support the show, so that's pretty nice to do, nice to have kind of. It's a pretty cool wireless charging stand. Again, it goes well at your desk or nightstand. And again, if you want to check, again, I'll have the Amazon link in the show notes, so you can go check it out afterwards. It's a really cool stand for $100. Doesn't do MagSafe, unfortunately, so that's definitely something to keep in mind if you use your iPhone. If you use MagSafe, on the other hand, so that's pretty interesting in a way. Though the Apple Watch part is pretty interesting in a way. It's awkwardly behind the iPhone, so you'll have to work with that, of course. So that's a bit of a bummer. But yeah, it doesn't have MagSafe, so this is, again, this could be a deal breaker if you have an iPhone 12 or iPhone 13, because you can do MagSafe on those iPhones in a way. There's a Belkin made wireless charger, but that's like $150. This one's 100, so for, again, to charge three different devices at once, so that's pretty interesting in a way, as I said. So if you want a really cool wireless charger, do check this one out. Again, it's in the show notes, so if you want to buy it. And again, as I've said, as always, if you buy it, it'll support the show, because we get an affiliate payment. We get a commission when you buy anything off Amazon. So yeah, that leads us to the end of the show. What do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sale_mao99. Follow me there if you can. And obviously send me a message if you have any thoughts about the show. Obviously, you can send your thoughts on the email address in the show notes if you want to. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That's obviously the best way to sort of bump the show up on Apple in a way. And also, as I said, subscribe so you don't miss another episode. And again, share this to your friends and family. That'll definitely help. And with that said, that is the end of the episode. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. I was about to say thank you for watching, and this is not a YouTube video. Oh well. Thank you for listening, and yeah. Till next week, this is your boy Mao signing out. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, have an incredible day. All right? Ciao.